on. It's 9:12 here on WGN. We're going to do this show. We're going to start it now. We're going to go from 9 o'clock to about noon. 9 o'clock to noon, that's about 3 hours. At the end of the 3 hours, we're going to see what we got, and whoever has the best show wins.
That's not bad.
We're going to do 3 hours. 3 hours of radio this
way.
It's
actually pretty good.
Going to interview some people. Let's go into the newsroom. What have you got? What have you got? If you got something for me, let's hear it. If you don't got something, I'll do something else. We'll do figure out what works. We're going to win this thing. How about that, huh? That's a fun ball game.
It was. Yeah. Did you watch the whole thing?
No, I didn't watch the whole thing because I went to bed. I got a little tired and fussy. I thought if I wake up tomorrow morning and LSU hasn't won this thing, well, then by golly, I'll be very upset. That's what I thought. I have to stop doing that now. It's been suggested the Cubs bullpen to end its home run dancing this season. Speaking of sports, that was our daily web poll question yesterday, the news click.
Was it really?
72% said what? End the bullpen home run dances or keep the bullpen home run dances?
I'm saying they said end it.
72% said keep dancing. Woohoo!
That's what I was going to say.
I'm
yeah,
shocked.
Why not?
I was on the.
It's humorous.
Let's just say. I disagree. It's fun and it celebrates a dinger. Keep dancing. 72% of you said that. I was with the. That was fun, but there's not been enough to dance about, so stop dancing.
That's kind of what I was thinking. That it just is kind of one of those things where if you start hitting home runs and winning, then you start dancing.
Then you start dancing. But right now, we ain't got nothing to dance about. Now, maybe at noon, when we're doing this thing, we'll go 3 hours. We got something to dance about. Right now, we got no dancing. So, I'm sorry in advance, but it's just going to be that way today because I got them in my head now. So, you guys were talking this morning, and the whole country is talking about the 1917 Houston Astros, the manager and general manager.
Or 2017.
1917.
Think of the Black Sox here.
So. No kidding. The 2017 team. And so you can fire the manager or the general manager, and you can suspend the team, and you could give them fines. But that's a small consolation to the Dodgers, who lost the World Series to the Astros that year. Mm-hmm. I'll read from a column in a little bit in L.A. this morning, the sports columnist there, and he said, we got cheated, and we should have our own parade, because that is our World Series. The Astros cheated. And one of the ways they did it was they would put a camera in center field, right? Yep. They would steal the signal, relay it to the guys in the dugout, and then the guys in the dugout would relay it either to the guy on second base or directly through some audio signal to the batter at the plate. He would now know if it's going to be a breaking ball or a fastball. One of the ways they did it was in this. Here, I will now play for you the audio of a game that season against the White Sox. The White Sox are pitching. The Astros are at the plate. This is in Houston. You'll hear the play-by-play guy. They didn't mic the garbage can, but you can hear it in the distance. See if you can hear the two bam-bams.
Astros down two in the bottom half of the eighth.
That's it. That's what it sounded like on the TV broadcast.
That means off-speed pitch coming.
Yeah. Elif, just play the bum-bum again. And that's the booth mics picking it up. So it was loud enough. And in fact, when they do that, then the catcher goes, hold on. And then he goes out to the mound and they change the signals because even they knew something was fishy going on. I'm not against players stealing signals and relaying them if they're doing it on their own. But if they're using technology, then I don't think they should do that.
I mean, it's always been a part of the game. There's always been some inventiveness about it. But, yeah, I think this is – there had been an issue with Apple Watches, remember, a few years ago in Boston. And they sent a note around that you couldn't have a smartwatch in the dugout.
Because these guys are cheating. Something happened to me yesterday at the Whole Foods I want to tell you about. It's a great frustration. And maybe it's not yours, but it is mine. So, like millions of Americans yesterday – I decided to overpay for groceries. I went to the Whole Paycheck near the radio station because I can't resist their Sonoma chicken salad. That's really good.
Do you mean Whole Foods?
What did I say? Whole Paycheck?
Yeah.
And I noticed in the deli case, next to the deli case where I'm standing, they have the deli case to my left where they have the meat. And the pepper-crusted filet beef medallions cost $41 a pound, which caused me to later Google things that cost $41 a pound. And while there were no results for that search, the fourth item that did come up was an article entitled 19 of the Most Expensive Substances in the World. Heroin is number 11 on that list, incidentally. Plutonium is number 7. Antimatter is number 1. So while Whole Foods' pepper-crusted beef tenderloin did not come up on the list, it's still a list a grocery store does not want to be associated with. So anyway, I'm at the Whole Foods, and I check out with a large scoop of the Sonoma chicken salad and a medium scoop of broccoli salad for $14. The cost of the chicken and the broccoli and the mayonnaise that I have in these two containers comes to the hourly salary of the person giving it to me. Think about that. And then I walk to the checkout. And here is the meat, the pepper-crusted meat of the story, if you will. There were two checkers working with slow lines behind them, and the only other option was the self-checkout area, and that had 19 people in front of me. I counted 19 people with one person managing the self-checkout area. So I play the game that we all play of checkout roulette. I always pick the losing line. I'm just standing there, and I thought, if they're selling slices of beef for $41 a pound, and chicken salad for a pretty fair profit, why do we have to stand in line and check ourselves out? Aren't they making enough money at this place? These two scoops of salad in my hand would pay for the hourly wage of the person to check me out. And there's 18 other people in front of me, 19. And that's just right now. The registers just keep running, beep, beep, beep. I'm thinking, really, you've only got three people helping to check us out right now? I was outraged. No, I'm not kidding. I mean, and my wife's been out of town the last week, so I've had to fend for myself. She said, you know, John, there are stores. You can go buy groceries. So I did that, and just, you know, not that I've never been to the grocery store before, but this is just like, I've heard people make this complaint, and I thought, yeah, this is ridiculous.
Ever since the self-checkout things have come out, there seems to be less people checking people out in every grocery store.
It's
not just that one. I think they're all the same, pretty much.
You know, sometimes the self-checkout is good because you can actually do, you can go boop, and you're in, you're out, and you're out the door, and you don't need somebody to do it, and it's easier. Some people actually seem to like managing that situation on their own. I get that.
Except when you have to weigh the fruit and pick the, you know...
There's
pick
a
what it is.
The lady always comes up to me at the Jewel, where I also self-check out, and she looks at me like, really? Really? I've got to show you how to do this again?
How am I supposed to know which apple it is?
I don't work there. And I just think, for one thing, I don't know that those are really fantastic jobs, but they're jobs. So I want people to have the jobs at the grocery stores, number one. And number two, if you're at a high-end grocery store where you're paying a lot for the food, I think part of the price of that should go to paying somebody to check you out and bag your groceries. I mean, if I ever buy $41 a pound beef, by God, you better teach that thing to read. I don't want you to just check it out. I want you to handle it for me, too. I want you to come home and cut it into small pieces. Paul, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Paul? You're on the air.
Good morning, John. Really, I work in the grocery business as well, so I understand where you're coming from. But what's amazing to me about the employment market is it's clear to me that there's just not enough people to go around for quote-unquote minimum wage jobs. So if Whole Foods is starting people at $15 an hour, which is $600 hours a week, the fact of the matter is that that's about average wage for a grocery worker, if not even better. Most grocery workers are between 10 and 12. There's just not enough people. We pay a pretty good wage at our place, and we just can't find reliable enough people in the employment chain across the spectrum. I don't know what the secret sauce is. I don't know if it's mentoring or if it's promotional abilities, but it's amazing to me of how you just can't find the people. So I would imagine Whole Foods is a robust recruiting program, but unless they offer unbelievable pay, terrific benefits, full-time hours, mind you, full-time, not part-time hours, then they will attract a workforce that's going to be studying and want to take the job. But in the meantime, the jobs remain unfilled.
Last night I was having a drink with a buddy of mine who runs a retail store, and he said the exact same thing. you know, his great frustration. He's got supply issues. He's got all kinds of issues that affect his profit and his loss and all of that stuff. The biggest headache he's got is getting people to work. He said, we are trying to get high school kids to come in. But, you know, that's not a career. But, hey, it's a little extra money and we'll pay you a decent wage. He said, we can't even get that. So frustrating.
Yeah, you can't even get that. And when you do get that, you have to manage it really carefully.
Yeah.
And reality is they fire themselves half the time. So effectively, you've got about 2 weeks' worth of work out of them.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for jumping in.
No problem. Thanks for having me,
Paul. You bet.
More interest in these gold, these beef medallions. Is this grass-fed beef with gold sprinkles on top of it?
Bill Curtis whispered into their ears as they slowly chewed healthy grass.
$40 a pound.
$41 a pound. $41 a pound. Scooter, you're on WGM. What can we do for you?
Hey, John. Well, last time, okay, I go to McDonald's every day for a medium cup of coffee, which is, okay, it's like 170, 160, wherever you're at, tax purposes. Yesterday, two of my employees asked me what they wanted. They wanted hot chocolate. So I went to McDonald's. This is McDonald's in Lyons. I got two cups of medium hot chocolate and my medium hot, my medium coffee. It was $9.40 for the three. Now, John, let me ask you this. What do you think the one cup of medium hot chocolate? Now,
what does a medium cup of hot chocolate at McDonald's cost? $1.69, final answer.
$3.40.
Well, did they put peppermint schnapps in there, or what's going on?
No, nothing. It was $3.40. And then, John, I was floored because I haven't bought hot chocolate in a long time. I get my coffee every day. And this is McDonald's. This is not Starbucks. This is not going somewhere else. But another thing, too, about the employees trying to find somebody. I'm in the construction business in Cicero.
Yeah.
We've been looking for a full-time mechanic for 3 years. We've had a couple guys come through for applications, but I can't even find a full-time mechanic. And I have a friend that owns a grocery store in Cicero and one in Berwyn, Torres, and he cannot even employ stock boys. He says the young youth American Hispanic don't want to work. The older ones will work 60, 70 hours a week. But he's having a hard time finding any help to stock his shelves. It's unbelievable to find anybody to work now. With the economy being so good, it's hard to find anybody.
Yeah, I guess that's an unintended consequence of people having jobs, is they can decide not to work fast food. Scooter, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you listening, my friend.
Thanks. Great show.
Yeah,
great
have a good day. 630 texted in and said, John, most Jewels no longer have self-checkout because of theft. Another texter, my Jewel eliminated self-checkout. I assume it was at all stores. Theft.
My Jewel still has the self-checkout lines. As a matter of fact,
too.
I think they added a couple of recently. Mm-hmm. They added more positions. And Mariano's has those now. They have a lot of those self-checkout places as well.
Please put the item in the baggage area. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. What? I thought it was in the baggage area. Which side is the baggage area?
And then when you don't, the error thing comes on and you can't go any further and you have to wait for somebody to come over.
Wait for assistance.
I know. The lady comes over, looks at me like, wow. Yeah. Will you be able to manage this food when you get home, dum-dum? Because a Labrador came in a little while ago and was able to pick this stuff up. John, you're on WGM. What can we do for you? You're on the air.
Hey, John, I agree with you with the self-checkout. I refuse to go through the line. And the principle is that if I'm doing all the work, you know, why am I paying the same price as those who are going through the checkout line?
Yeah, right.
So up here, I'm in Wisconsin, so we have a Pick and Save instead of Jewel, although I'm familiar with Jewel. And after 8 o'clock at our local, they no longer have a checkout person. You have to go through the self-checkout line.
Wow.
So I had a whole basket full of groceries some time ago, and I'm looking at the manager lady. I said, I don't want to do this myself. I refuse to. And so I made her come over and run all my stuff across the self-checkout scanner, bag it up, and then
so what did you do?
Paid for it.
Did you end up leaving the stuff there?
No. I insisted that she come over and do it for me.
You diva. You're a Pickwick diva. But I get it. No, listen, I mean, I understand your frustration. I would not go that far, but I understand that completely, particularly when that person isn't doing anything. I'm out of time. Thanks for the call, John. I'm glad you got in. It's 9:30. This is WGN.
Fly with me. Let's fly away.
If this got on the plane next to me, I would live with that.
Was she sitting on her boyfriend's lap on the plane?
Not yet. But I think that's what it was. They're like, okay, we think we know what's going on here, and we're not going to have any of that shenanigans.
That's why we made the bathroom so much smaller.
If you can pull that off, props to you. Because
hey, I witnessed it when I went to Germany a month ago.
Really?
Yes.
Both of
yes.
them emerging, or did you just notice when they both went
I
in?
I watched them both go in and come out.
Wow. How long?
About 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I don't have any problem with
they
any of that.
They were strangers, too.
No.
Yeah. And oh. about a 15 to 20 year age difference. I heard their whole conversation.
So there's actually an app that you can that allows people to meet if they're traveling on the same plane or same bus together.
For that purpose?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not to exchange recipes.
Angels cheer, cause we're together.
Probably right about that, Steve Bertrand. I don't know if you heard Peter Greenberg on our show yesterday. The travel expert does a weekend show about the travel industry on WGN Radio. Peter told us on the show yesterday that the number one area where airlines make money, they make more money at this than anything else. Anyone? Anyone?
Well, I know because I was here.
What is the correct answer?
The bags.
The bags. The checked bag fees are the number one source of revenue for the airline industry. I guess I'm not surprised. It's 941 WGN. John Williams here. By the way, lots of topics in the mix this morning. America is talking about the baseball controversy, and I do think it is still a fair question to ask if the Houston Astros should have to give up their World Series championship in 2017. They beat the Dodgers. People in L.A. sure feel that way. A couple of texts about this. Question for Dave Ennett. Will the Astros manager have to wait to serve his suspension until another team hires him?
No, apparently not. Apparently his suspension has begun, and that's it, and he can't work until 2021.
Okay, so they suspend him for the year, but he's unemployed anyway, so it's kind of the same thing. I think if that thing really had teeth, they would say, once you get hired, once you have a job, then you have to be suspended from the job. But right now he doesn't even have a job to be suspended
from. That's true. That's true, but he would somebody would hire him. I mean, baseball does tend to take care of baseball. And I think that he might not be hired as a manager right away, but he would have a job somewhere if he
if a pitcher if gets available. Suspended for some reason.
Yeah, I've never liked that part of it.
And they suspend him for four games, right. But his turn in the rotation didn't come up for five, then he hasn't right. lost a start. This is like that.
Or he might lose one.
Yeah, but that's all. It's not five.
Yeah. No, I see that, but I think that this is one of those, it's kind of a tricky situation, but yeah, apparently the suspension begins immediately.
While he's unemployed.
Whether he's working unemployed or not.
708 texted in, if I remember correctly, several years ago, we stripped a Little League team title from some kids because of cheating and rule breaking. These rule breakers are grown adults, yet they get to keep their title. Doesn't sound right. What a good point.
Yeah.
Those kids did not do a thing wrong.
Right.
And the only cheating they did was some of them didn't live within the district, so you had some kids that probably weren't going to be on the team. I would never have stripped that team of their title. But I know that's the wrong message to send, and I'm an outlier on that, but that's just me getting real personal about it. I want to pick up a couple of phone lines, and then we'll answer the $64 million question about the royal family. First, Jan's on WGN. Jan, we were talking about grocery stores and self-checkouts. Yes. What did you want to say?
Yes, good morning. My daughter works in a suburban store in Arlington Heights. She's been there over 10 years. Loves her job. I can honestly tell you that the employees do not like self-checkouts. It makes the customers aggravated when things don't move along.
Yeah.
It promotes stealing, if you want to say, something bad. People are trying to get away with something if someone's not watching them. Because if you notice, generally they have one person
monitoring the whole area. And I see people getting frustrated and like, oh, hell, I'm just put it in the bag anyway because I don't want to deal with this.
Right. The cashiers are frustrated because the people get frustrated that they don't want to wait. And what it does, besides the stealing, the other thing it does, they cut down on scheduling employees. They don't schedule employees for as much time as they could, and they restrict their hours. It's based on how many years they're employed there.
I just got a text message. Thanks for the phone call, Jan, from somebody who said, my kids are in high school. They all work, but they don't get many hours, and that's part of the problem. Thanks for the phone call. I was complaining a little while ago about having to self-checkout, which is fine, but I think if you're at an expensive store and the pepper-crusted filet of beef costs $41 a pound, not that I was buying that, but when I was looking at these high prices, I thought, why are we all standing in line to check out ourselves? You should have people doing that, and I'm not alone in feeling that way. Lots of texts then come out of that conversation. John, speaking of self-checkouts, I'm waiting on my W-2 from all of the stores that use them, seeing how I have to check my own self out. Technically, I'm an employee now. Where's my W-2? And finally, to his point about getting good employees, my wife was recently asked in an interview, quote, "Now, are you the sort of person who comes to work every day, most days, or just once in a while?" I guess it's very frustrating to find people to staff some of these stores. It's 9:49. And about the baseball controversies this morning, on line three, Lois wanted to say what? Lois, you're on WGN. Hi.
Oh, good morning, John. Yes, I think the asterisk is the answer. You can't put the teams back again. You can't go back and replay the playoffs and all. So I think they should continue to print with the World Series winners, contenders, and put an asterisk in front of it and at the bottom explaining why. It's been done with individual players before and teams and politicians. So that would be my answer.
I appreciate the call. Thanks, Lois. What do you think about that, Dave Bennett?
I think mentally people
are going to do that anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the stigma is there. I think, though, then you have to get into the asterisk business on a much larger scale. And when you look at, say, the Hall of Fame, for instance.
Oh, no kidding. Well, you've got asterisks. What do we do with the guys that cheated, the steroid guys? I think a lot of people are putting asterisks by their names.
But again, it's for now, it's an imagined asterisk. Yeah. But I do think, and we talked about this a little bit earlier today, that a lot of people are looking at this and say, well, you know, you've kept Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame. You've kept the steroid guys out of the Hall of Fame to the best of your ability. And so if how fair is that? And I think that's a legitimate question. And I also think that people are less opposed to the steroid guys now. I mean, I think there's been sort of a softening of that as time has gone on, which I think is understandable. I think time does heal wounds.
9:51 is the time.
You know, when this happened yesterday, I'm like, oh, the manager and general manager get busted. But it didn't dawn on me that there are many, many players who are involved in this.
Yeah, right. But they can't. The feeling is that they would be embroiled in grievances, and the union would be involved, and you would just never get to the end of it.
That's a good point.
Okay, I get that. But the fact is, though, that these players were actively cheating. Like, yeah, they were in on it because they were listening for the bang.
Well, here's the other part of it, too. Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, was the bench coach at the time and apparently heavily involved in this thing. So now baseball has said he is going to be punished, but they haven't said to what extent.
If you tried to track down all of the players and then put an asterisk by their name, how involved were they? It's almost impossible.
Well, okay, John, how about this? You go up to the plate and you're responding to the banging of the garbage can during a plate appearance.
Cheating. You are officially cheating.
So you're part of it.
Yeah. Even if you didn't ask. Even if you didn't ask, you're up there and you go, okay, they're doing that. Now I know it's a breaking ball, but I'm just up
consciously trying to ignore it.
Yeah, no kidding.
You got this thing coming at your head and 95 miles an hour. You might be focusing on that.
By the way, producer Olive, can you play for us again the first of those two cuts, the longer one, the garbage can banging? You'll hear the play-by-play, and this is against the White Sox in 2017. The Astros are at the plate. The White Sox, it was Farquhar. How do you say his
Danny
name?
Danny Farquhar
is pitching. And the Astros, I'm not sure who is up to the plate, but listen for the bang in the background.
Astros down two in the bottom half of the eighth.
I did not alter that audio in any way. That's what it was like.
But by the way, the Houston Astros owned the White Sox. I know they did in 18. I think they did in 17. I'm not sure they really needed to be stealing signs at that point.
Maybe they did, though, against the Dodgers. Here is that column in the Los Angeles Times this morning by Bill Plaschke, mm-hmm. who's an award-winning columnist yeah. for the LA Times. So here's how he starts his column. For 3 years, we've wondered, and now we know. How did the Houston Astros hitters so easily pound three of the Dodgers' hottest pitchers in two key games in Houston in the 2017 World Series? How did they so easily wreck Yu Darvish for four runs in the second inning of a Game 3 Astros victory? How did they so effortlessly score 10 runs against Clayton Kershaw and Brandon Morrow in the Game 5 victory? They cheated. That's how. They used technology. Their hitters knew what pitches were coming. They accumulated 18 runs with 26 hits and 6 home runs in 2 series-changing victories that have now indelibly been stamped with an asterisk on an event forever marred by a sickening truth. The Dodgers were cheated out of the 2017 World Series championship. This is not sour grapes, he writes. It's not revisionist history. It's fact. He's got a point
there.
Pretty
good argument.
I don't remember all of those details, but I'll bet if it was happening to the Cubs or White Sox, we'd go, man, we mailed it in for the World Series. Wait a minute!
By the way, the Houston Astros swept the White Sox in 2017, the year they won the World Series. It was the White Sox won the season series 4-2. In 18, that's the year that the Astros swept the Sox all 7 games.
I'm still upset about the Little League team from the South Side losing their World Series championship. Their Little League World Series championship. Bertrand used to get on my case about that, but I thought that we did not need to know that. I literally wanted that truth swept under the rug. Isn't that an awful way to feel about this? But it was such a great moment for us, the rally at Grant Park and the White Sox embracing that team, and the mayor was there, and yeah. It was just such a great thing. And the kids didn't do anything wrong. And I could go on like this for a while, but I don't think that they had any extraordinary advantage. But they stripped them. It's more complicated with the pros. Glenn, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. How are you, Glenn? Good morning.
Good, great, John. My comment is similar to what you were just saying. It's setting a double standard. The Little League kids lost their World Series title, but the professionals don't lose their World Series title. That's just, well, so we're telling our children it's bad to cheat. Until you're an adult, then it's okay to cheat.
Until there's millions on the line. Well put. I'm out of time, Glenn. Terrific that you called. Thanks for listening. We wholeheartedly agree. 10:09 on WGN. John Williams in our Skyline studio, downtown Chicago. Thanks for tuning in. We're leaving the topic of grocery store self-checkout lanes, at least for the time being. This topic will always be there. I told you about my experience a little while ago. 708 texted in and said, John, Costco has self-checkout. That's ridiculous. And about the ongoing conversation this morning about baseball and what should be done with the Houston Astros now that we know they cheated in the season and cheated in the World Series, 224 said, so it's a 1-year suspension for cheating, but Pete Rose is still banished due to gambling. Make it make sense, John. I don't know that I can do that. We're just talking about this morning. We're also following the story of the royal family. Even those of us who aren't royal watchers don't even understand the fascination with the royal family, or a little fascinated with Harry and Meghan's decision to distance themselves from the royal family.
Prince Harry and Duchess Meghan dropped the banger and mash that they would step back as senior royals and work to become financially independent. But like many millennials who move out, they will stay on the Queen's Verizon family plan.
Let me get this straight. The royal family's upset that Harry and Meghan want to move out and become financially independent. Isn't that every parent's dream? To not have their 35-year-old kids still living with them?
The Queen summoned everyone to a private meeting at her royal country house, and everyone attended except Meghan Markle, who conference called in. And I'll be honest, I don't blame Meghan for not going, because nothing good happens when white people invite you to the countryside. We all know. We've all seen it. We've all seen Get Out. We know how this
And it doesn't end well. It's 10:10. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. It's online this morning, and it's about the finances of the royal family. Listen to this. In 1760, the British monarchy handed over revenue from large tracts of land to Parliament in return for an income from the government. So the family says, here's the land, but you need to give us a salary. Today, the taxpayer payment, known as the sovereign grant, covers the cost of royal duties and maintains several palaces, including Buckingham Palace. Last year, it came to $106 million. This is fixed as a proportion of the profits made by the lands. Some years, they increase the percentage that comes back to them. The Queen supplements this with two other sources of income, her personal wealth, which is not publicly disclosed, and the Duchy of Lancaster, founded in the 13th century, and that right now is worth $711 million. And as I understand it, $711 million. And as I understand it, then the Queen and the Prince say, all right, Harry, here's how much money we're going to give you this year. And it sounds a little arbitrary, but my understanding is last year he got a salary of $3 million. Now, I'm not very good at this thing, as I said a moment ago, but you know, actually is pretty good, this thing, is Fred Weintraub, who co-hosts here in Chicago a podcast and a syndicated radio show called Gabby Road. You get it? Fred's on a line. Hey, Fred, it's John. You're on WGN Radio again. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, that's my reading of the Wall Street Journal. What would you add to what I just said about the finances?
So what I would add to it is, first, that you don't have to have a tag day for Meghan and Harry, because in addition to the money that they get from the sovereign grant, from the money that they get from Prince Charles, they also have their own money because, remember, unfortunately, when Princess Diana died, Harry and William both inherited money. Well, Harry was 11 years old at that point, and that money got put into, you know, into financial investments, and which he could not touch until his 30th birthday. But the real money that comes to Harry and William, but more to Harry, is through this thing called Duchy of Cornwall, which is controlled by Prince Charles, and it's always controlled by the person who is next in line to the throne. Mm. So he has what I look at as this real estate portfolio that may generate £100 million a year, of which he takes the revenue, he takes part of that revenue, which is about £21 million per year, and he decides how he's going to use that. So that's basically his expense account that he uses for himself, that he uses for official travel, that he gives to William for his official business, and he gives to Harry. So the real question in my mind is, with Harry deciding that he and Meghan want to go in a different route, are they going to get punished, and is some of that money going to go away, and are they going to then have to make their own way in the world? Now, when you're Harry and you're the Duke of Sussex, you are one of the most popular royals in modern times. So just like the Gates Foundation or the Clinton Foundation, I don't think this whole story is really about the money, because they can make way more money by going out on their own. I think the real thing that people are concerned about and irritated about, and wouldn't it have been cool to be able to put your ear to the door to that meeting yesterday when the Queen, Prince Charles, William, and Harry all got together? And you can imagine, and my speculation from a royal watcher standpoint is that they weren't happy. You know, the Queen clearly at 93 wasn't happy. Prince Charles wasn't happy. And I don't think it's unhappiness about Harry and Meghan wanting to go a different way in life. I think it's all about how they did it, and did they do it in a respectful way. And we kind of all know in life, when people feel pressured and when they think that their world is falling apart, and clearly you never know if Meghan was having a meltdown, and if she was having a meltdown and any of the stories are true that she went to Harry and said, I don't like this life, he was stuck between a rock and a hard place because he loves the UK. He wants to do the right thing for the country. He particularly loves the Queen, and he loves his wife. And so he's kind of screwed no matter which way he goes. And sometimes when you're in that emotional turmoil, you do the wrong thing. And
do you think he did the wrong
clearly,
thing?
Do
you
think I don't think they're doing the wrong thing in deciding, look, he's never going to be the king, or chances of him ever being the king. You and I have a better chance of becoming the king than he does. Mm-hmm. But when you're not in line to the throne, you have to find your own way in life, because it's not like a job that it's all laid out for you. You know what you're going to do. You know what you can, the amount of money you can generate for 30 years. So I don't think they're doing the wrong thing in branching out, but I think they clearly did the wrong thing and were disrespectful to both Harry's father, Prince Charles, and to the Queen. And the part that will never be known publicly is, did Meghan put a wedge between this family? You know, when she says, oh, I'm not sure this is what I signed up for you. Well, look at the other side. When they got married 2 years ago and her wedding was seen by billions of people on every network in every global country that you can watch it on, and you say, hey, fairy princess, you're on television and you're going to be a princess in the royal family. You don't decide a year or a year and a half later because it's tough that you don't want to do this. And P.S., the Queen gives them a house at Frogmore, which is very close to Windsor. Then the taxpayers pay a couple million dollars to help decorate it. Because, you know, when you're living in a $4 million house, you can't just go to your local Target, although there's nothing wrong with Target, and decorate it that way. And so you can't have your cake and eat it too. And I think they kind of want to do that.
So you said you wanted to be a fly on the wall when the Queen was expressing her dismay with the way they've handled this. There was an attorney that spoke for the Queen, among others, at that family meeting. We have the actual audio of that. And I think a question a lot of us have in our minds, and you're helping answer it, is, well, what is it that, you know, if you're Harry and you're trying to justify to the rest of the world, maybe you don't care, but a lot of us are wondering, you know, how is it that you get this money? Where does it come from? Here is that audio clip.
What would you say you do here?
Well, look, I already told you. I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand it? What the hell is wrong with you people?
It's actual audio from that meeting. I don't know if you're aware of that. But so maybe then the emphasis is on the brothers, too, because if Harry will never be in line to be the king, but he does want to stay in good enough graces to still be invited to the trough, then he needs to, you know, not tick off his dad too much. His dad is bankrolling his lifestyle, and his brother would be in a position to cut him off down the road too, right?
Absolutely. And the brothers were this part of the story is really sad, because the brothers were, William and Harry were so close, and especially after Diana died, and William had to kind of step up to the plate and take Harry under his wing and say things are going to be fine. And, you know, they had a really close relationship, and Kate had a close relationship with them. And now it seems like it's separated. Some of the stories that have come out in the press about William bullying them, I'm not sure that's so true. And, you know, when you look at the media in the UK, they take at times liberties in generating the stories that they want to generate. But you clearly don't want to make the person who holds the purse strings, which is Prince Charles at some point and Prince William at some point, you want to have a good relationship with them.
Right.
And there's for all the negativity about Harry doing stupid things in his life, which as a youngster and in college, he certainly didn't use good common sense at times. He's generated millions of dollars in charity money.
He also served in the military for his country. I forgive him some of his youthful indiscretions. I know there's some that were perplexing, but by and large, I think he's comported himself pretty well. Fred Weintraub is on a phone line. He's the co-host of Gabby Road, a podcast you can subscribe to, listen to every week. They talk about royal stuff. The whole world is gabbing about Abbey Road and royal stuff right now. We've got some phone calls for you, too. The number's 312-981-7200. You can call or text in. And, Fred, it's clear where you are on this, but if I may, I'll just say for the record that I'm on Team Meghan. I think, yeah, you signed up for that. It was a fantastic wedding, and you've been enjoying the riches of the family, but now you have a family of your own, and you don't like it. And I don't know that you have to give up the rest of your life to events that you could not have completely anticipated. Like, yeah, it's a royal family. You're going to live under a microscope, and there's protocols, and you might not like all of that, but maybe it's worse than she imagined. Is she a servant to the royal family for the rest of her life? I give her the opportunity to cut bait if she doesn't like it.
Well, I would say, one, no, she's not a servant to the royal family. If you look at the history over the last 20 years, the younger generation of the royal family has certainly changed the Queen's mind in how she goes about doing certain things. Clearly, there were landmark issues that came up where the Queen made mistakes and he had to fix those mistakes. One of them was when Diana died, and there was controversy about when she should have come back to London. This meeting yesterday is another mark that will go down in history, that the Queen clearly wants this issue resolved as quickly as it can be resolved, both from a PR standpoint and because it's her personal family. And to your point, yes, Meghan does deserve a personal life. Meghan does deserve an opportunity to raise her family the way she wants to raise her family. But when you're a member of the royal family and you take an oath under God, and you can argue the fact that Harry didn't take an oath, he just happened to be born into that part of the royal family.
Yeah, it's always harder for him.
You know, yeah, it is harder for him, and he's not going to be king, so the path is not clear. So it seems to me that the real word is compromise. How do I keep my responsibilities to the royal family? How do I do the right thing for my wife and the right thing for my country? And there's got to be a balance. Now, what you don't know, and what I don't know, because from a royal watcher standpoint, we're guessing here, because they're very tight-lipped. They're very manipulative, and they're going to give you the information that they want to give you and leave out the parts that they don't want to give you. So when you saw yesterday the press release that came out from the Queen, she did not call them the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. She referred to her grandson. She referred to Meghan and Harry. So we don't know at this point whether they might lose their titles. So you don't really know what's going on. You don't really know, was this just a good PR move?
Right.
And they're going to work out the layers as they go along. But Meghan certainly, to your point, deserves an opportunity to live a great life and not to be scrutinized. And Harry will never forget that the press, in his mind, killed his mother.
Yeah, that's a point not lost on some of us. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex, this is from that Wall Street Journal story, say they want to break the mold. On their website, they speak of their desire for a new working model. They have already applied to trademark Sussex Royal, covering a host of items, including socks and greeting cards, which struck me as a little bit beneath them, but whatever. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with Fran. You're on WGN. Fran, what can we do for you?
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment. I totally agree that maybe Harry is very much in tune with what the press has been doing to Meghan, everything with what happened to his mother. But beyond that, what I called for was the other day on Inside Edition, which I watch every day, you get little snippets here and there about things. And they had said through some reporter, and again, was I paying total attention? Of course not. That one of the newspapers or some newspaper in Britain was going to publicize the fact that they were going to move. And it hadn't come out yet, so that's why they jumped in and they said it first to the Queen that they wanted to do all the things that they want to do before the newspaper printed it. And maybe that's why it seems so quick and so whatever, for them to do what they did. But
right. They
had heard that a newspaper was going to print it, and they wanted to get that story out before the newspaper did.
That's an interesting point, Fran. Had you heard about that, Fred?
Yeah, I did hear about that. So if you know that the story is going to be leaked to the press,
yeah,
the first thing you do in my mind is you go, it's not like it's not his grandmother. And so for all the articles that say he couldn't get to her, if it were an emergency and he needed to get to her, he could get to his father, Prince Charles, who could get to the Queen in 10 seconds, and it wouldn't have come out in 10 minutes, or at least it wouldn't have looked like an uncoordinated disaster in how they went about doing this.
Fran, thank you for the call. It's a good point. Lots of calls. We've got less than a minute left. Ron said, people forget that Harry is an heir to Diana's fortune. That is, they'll be taken care of. You mentioned that yourself. And Mel wanted to say something, too. Mel, you're on WGN. Hi.
Good morning, King John.
Hey.
My question is, and I've been asking this question for 50 years, why do British people still recognize the royal blood when the royal blood was the meanest, toughest, ruthlessest people in England when they became the royal blood, and people still recognize them as royal?
Your thought about that, Fred?
Well, I'm thinking about it right now, and, you know, it's a good point, except if you look to the last 100 years, and you look to the last 90, and you look to Queen Elizabeth, I don't think there are too many people that can argue that she hasn't done a really good job in generating income for other people, in being the perfect spokesperson for the UK. But there's clearly argument, you know, half the people are going to love the royals, half the people are going to not love the royals, but I would kind of just end in saying, one, that they generate a lot of money for charity, and two, the part that Harry and Meghan have to figure out, where they say we're only going to talk to certain reporters, is a crock. And the reason it's a crock is because they're public figures, they're part of an establishment, so you can't move to Canada and you can't move to the United States and say the UK reporters were too tough on us, because do you think if they moved to Chicago that the Chicago reporters are not going to be as tough on them? So I think they have to mature along the way. I think it's a hard thing to do. I would not want to be in their position, but it's a process, and we're going to watch this process play out.
Nice to talk to you. Gabby Road is the way you can hear more royal talk from Fred Weintraub and Company. It's nice to hear your voice this morning, Fred. Thanks for helping us out.
Nice to talk to you, John. Talk to you soon.
10:33 now on WGN. Steve, I don't know if you heard part of the conversation earlier in the show. I was talking about the fact that I had to self-check out at a store that charges $41 for a cut of pepper-crusted filet of beef. It was the Whole Foods near the radio station. And I thought, okay, if you guys can give... I want to watch somebody spend $41 for a pound of that stuff. Or maybe $20.50 for half a pound. Think about that. That would be $11 for a quarter pound. You get the idea. But if that's what you guys are charging, then you ought to be able to, having made that much money, pay somebody to do the checkouts. I was complaining that there weren't enough checkouts.
That's so weird.
Enough checkers. I mean, really, I got the chicken salad and a little broccoli salad and paid $14 for a couple scoops of that. And I thought, why am I standing in line checking myself out here?
So your beef is that there's self-checkout?
I'm angry that I have to wait that long in line and do it myself.
You'd rather wait, stand behind the guy with the 41 pounds of beef or whatever? I get upset when stores don't have self-checkout.
I've heard from people this morning who said, I love self-checkout. I do it myself. Zip, zip, zip.
Love it.
There were 19 people in line in front of me. At the self-checkout
area.
Okay,
well, that's an issue, yes.
So I'm like, you need to get another lane open here. And if you don't have enough people, then you need to pay more people, especially since we're paying $14 for a scoop of broccoli salad and a scoop of chicken salad.
How long did you wait?
Well, so I went into the regular checkout lines where the checkers were working the people, and a guy was... That was the wrong decision.
By the time I got, every time you move, it's the wrong decision.
It's checkout roulette, and I always lose. If I had been the 19th or 20th person in the checkout line, self-checkout, I would have gotten out a lot quicker. There were only two people in front of me where the checker was working.
Right.
But, you know, they were buying all kinds of crazy
stuff. Well, but you were
probably
20th in line, and there were probably four or five kiosks you were waiting for, right?
That is true.
Yeah.
And one woman managing that, and she's working it, and she's working it. But I just looked at it, and I thought, that's what I thought.
It's the best. They just put in, I just was at my Mariano's on Saturday or Sunday, and I see they're putting in a couple there, that's great.
When I see grocery stores installing those, I see them unemploying people, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, but you can steal more stuff.
Which people do. So some of the stores are now taking them out because they said theft has been too much of a problem. Go figure that. I mean, and I don't know that it's people who go in there with the intention of stealing or because...
You just missed something?
Or because you know, the machine talks to you and says, you know, place item in the bagging area. And you're like, I thought I already did. And is this a organic tomato or a non-organic tomato?
Well,
I don't know. And you get ticked off and you just put it in the bag and say, hell with you. I think there's some frustration theft.
But there's always someone there to help you, right?
Well, that's a... Well, then... Well, now we're back to square one again.
But she or he is managing two or three or four different kiosks. No? You're shaking your head?
No. I'm yelling at Olive.
Oh.
That's a different conversation.
Yeah, I'm all for them. I love them.
All right. Well, they're not going anywhere. John, the Walmart in Vernon Hills turned almost all of their lanes into self-checkout. Walmart, really? I was there the day before Black Friday. There was one woman helper. She was running all over the place, helping everyone. It was stupid. I'll never go back there. 847, Dear John, I love self-checkout. I love not having to wait behind a very mature lady as she laboriously begins to write a check. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Listen, if you are going to write a check, which is a piece of paper with numbers on it, if you're going to do that, have it pre-filled out. Already have written out your signature, already have written out the name of the store, already have that stuff in there. And then just write in the dollar amount when you check out. But if you're getting there and slowly tearing it out and saying, do you have a pen? Right. Then you are a bad person today.
Rough trip to the store, huh, John?
It was just one trip. Brenda said, you don't shop at the store for us much, do you? Hey. John, I love not having to haul my heavy club-sized items out in my cart. So much easier and faster for me to scan them without removing them from the cart. Some of you like the self-checkout. John, Trader Joe's has the best checkout system. Everyone pitches in when they ring a bell. It's great. 630, I never use self-pay. I'm doing the work of the cashier. Unless they discount me for my labor, I'm never going to self-checkout. I've heard that comment before, too. The New York Public Library has published the list. I'll get to the one book, Chicago, in just a second, but let's start here. The New York Public Library has, to celebrate their 125th anniversary, the New York Public Library said, here are the 10 most checked-out books of all time. And what do you know? You know them. You've read them. You've read them to your kids. The number one most checked out book of all time in the New York Public Library system with 485,000 checkouts is The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats. They say the library, which is the second largest in the United States after the Library of Congress, says that The Snowy Day by Ezra Jack Keats is a picture book. It's been borrowed almost 500,000 times since 1962. It's about an African-American boy named Peter. It's one of the earliest examples of diversity in children's books. Snow. It's about the snowy day, and snow is an experience all New Yorkers have experienced, so it's very relatable. The other reason that a lot of the books that are on the list are children's books is because they're short, so the turnover is a lot. You're not reading 400 pages. You're reading 25, 50 pages, and you can bring that back to the library, heck, the next day. So there's much faster turnover there. So Ezra Jack Keats' Snowy Day is number one. Number two, The Cat in the Hat. Cat in the Hat is the first book I read as a child. I don't know how many memories I have that predate my reading The Cat in the Hat to my mom and dad, but I remember walking up to them and saying, I think I've got it, and then I slowly read them the book. Number three, 1984 by George Orwell. Number four, Where the Wild Things Are by Maurice Sendak. Oh, a lot of us remember that with our kids, huh? Number five, To Kill a Mockingbird. Number six, Charlotte's Web. I have not read that book, but 337,000 people have checked it out at the New York Public Library. Number seven, Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury. Number eight, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie. That book's been around forever. Number nine, we finally get to Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. J.K. Rowling's 231,000 checkouts at that one library. And number 10 is The Very Hungry Caterpillar, Eric Carle. By the way, honorable mention, Goodnight Moon by Margaret Wise Brown. Do you remember the first book that you read?
The first book that I read?
Yeah.
No. No.
It was a big moment in my life.
Well, I was reading it like 18 months, so I don't have a memory.
Yeah. You were going to say something else, weren't
you?
Well,
those are all children's books, right?
Right.
So that's not very helpful to me.
I guess not. Right. You're not going to run out and get these. Although, if you haven't read Fahrenheit 451 or right. To Kill a Mockingbird, just I remember that. That's another book. As an adolescent, I don't remember how old I was, but where I really felt the book.
You know, I didn't read that book until just a few years ago.
Isn't it good?
Well, yeah. I don't know what I was thinking.
But then did you read the predecessor to that or the book that came before or after that was eventually...
The Night Watchman?
Yeah,
no,
right.
No, no.
Yeah. Not as good. But a fascinating story.
Yeah, I think that there was... I mean, I interviewed people about that at the time that there were... that she might have published that under duress or she was already not quite fully with her faculties and probably should have come out.
Yeah, well, it sure isn't as good as the one that we know. Now, the one book, Chicago book this year, is The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. Let's all read this. We were talking yesterday about Lake Michigan, how violent it got over the weekend. We were talking about Lake Michigan water as an integral component in Malnati's pizza. Why is Malnati's pizza different? Why is it so good? Why do we love it so much? They absolutely use Lake Michigan water when they make it. If it's a Malnati's restaurant in Arizona, they drive the water in tanker trucks there. If it's in a suburb that is not part of the Lake Michigan water system, they tank the water there. They always use Lake Michigan water. This book, The Death and Life of the Great Lakes, is about the viability of the Great Lakes, what's happening with them. What about the water level? What about the pollutants? What about the fish in there, et cetera, et cetera? It's by Dan Egan, who's going to join us tomorrow. His book is The One Book Chicago. He was a finalist with this for the Pulitzer Prize. Here's how precious Lake Michigan water is. He says, roughly 97% of the globe's water is salt water. 97% of the globe's water is salt water. Of the 3% or so that is fresh water, most of that is locked up in the polar ice caps or trapped so far underground it is inaccessible. And of the sliver left over that exists as surface fresh water readily available for human use, about 20% of that, one out of every 5 gallons available on the planet, can be found in the Great Lakes. This is not an insignificant fact at a time when more than 750 million people do not have regular access to safe drinking water. He calls Lake Michigan's water North America's most precious natural resource. He's not the first to note, but he does quote others here in saying that it is the new petroleum. And he talks about the challenges to the water in the lake and some of the things that are in the lake right now. I think I understand this text before I go back to the book that I was sharing a note with you about. It's about self-checkout. Steve, am I reading this the same way? 630 texted in and said, yep, I buy my avocados for whatever the bananas sell for. That's theft.
How do you, then you must be punching in the number, the code number yourself. But most of them would have a barcode on them, I would think.
Yeah, you can also do the code. You put the bananas there, it weighs the bananas. And then you say, I've got bananas, beep. And then it says, here's pop, right?
Or you take the banana sticker off and put it on the avocado.
I guess so. I'm not exactly sure what this guy's scheme is, but I get it. Avocados are expensive, bananas are not. So you're able to buy the avocados for the price of bananas. Oh, heck, why jump all through all those hoops? Just put the avocados in your bag. Maybe it's not that easy. The one book Chicago this year is The Death and Life of the Great Lakes by Dan Egan. He's a Milwaukee guy. He'll join us to talk a little bit more about the viability of Lake Michigan and the other Great Lakes. But He's worried about it. It's interesting because he said one of the reasons the Lake Michigan water is so clear, we were talking about this yesterday, good for making pizza, good for me to go swimming in, is because it has those trillions of little zebra mussels in the water, which are an invasive species, and are so dense that they literally cover the floor of Lake Michigan from shore to shore. And they eat up all of the things that the rest of the fish and the animals and the things that make the lake viable, they eat it all up. They clean the water, but they also make it less healthy. So when you see, oh, wow, look at that. The water's so clear. You can see to the sandy shore when you're sandy bottom when you're swimming. He says they have no natural worthy predators in North America. They've transformed the lakes into some of the clearest fresh water on the planet. This is not a sign of a healthy lake. It's a sign of a lake having the life sucked out of it. He also talks about those Asian carp. The only thing blocking the Asian carp's swim through downtown Chicago and into Lake Michigan is an electrical barrier in the canal, one that has a history of unexpected shutdowns. And this is fascinating. Late in the book, he says, okay, here's one of the things you can do. Because you do those Asian carp are amazing. You see them on the Illinois River flapping in the air. People shoot them with bow and arrows. They literally leap into the air when the boat goes through. And there's so many of them, they'll jump right in your boat. They're big, they're ugly, they're heavy, they eat everything, they ruin the lakes and rivers that they're in. And if they get into Lake Michigan, forget about it. It's over. There's a guy at Baylor University, and his idea is this: genetically manipulate some of the male Asian carp, and they can do this, they've done this, so that when it reproduces with a female, obviously, the female will only have carp that are also male. So if you get a couple of them in there and they reproduce, and then they reproduce with the others and they reproduce with the others, you genetically alter the carp so that the offspring will always be male. And then by process of elimination, eventually there won't be enough women there, ladyfish, I don't know what you call them, and then you won't have any more fish. They'll stop reproducing. What a good idea. And they do have this technology, and they do have these always going to produce male offspring carp in tanks. And they're not sure if they should release them into the wild, because while it might seem like a good idea, how many times has some species been introduced into a, you know, an area, into water, whatever, and they go, this will be good. And then you find out, oh, no, it's not so good. Now we have a whole new problem we didn't anticipate. So they haven't done it yet. And who gets to decide? Does the city of Chicago? Does the state of Illinois? Do the people in Michigan? Does the United States federal government make that call? What about Canada? They border the lakes. So there's lots of decisions that have to be made. But that's just an intriguing idea to me. When he was first writing about that, I thought, heck yeah. Just if you only have boy Asian carp, eventually you won't have any more Asian carp. And they can genetically create enough of them, put them in there, they survive, they start reproducing. Their kids are always going to have this gene, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, well, that's a brilliant idea, because it is inevitable that those Asian carp are going to find their way into Lake Michigan. And then when that happens, the viability of the whole lake is in jeopardy. Say smart people in the book called The Death and Life of Great Lakes. It's not a depressing book. It's dire. But you also get the feeling that the lakes will survive, but we can make them better. And if you think about how much healthier and better Lake Michigan and the Chicago River is than it used to be, you know we can do good. One last note about it. At the beginning of the book, he said, we're very complacent, though. We go, yeah, look, the water's pretty clean now. We're good to go. It's life is better. And it's not. And he points to a number of problems along the way. What the Great Lakes don't have is that sort of image that everybody will see, and it will galvanize people into action. When the Exxon Valdez crashed and spilled oil, it was an ecological disaster. We all knew about it. But what really motivated Congress to change the laws about those ships is the images of people having to, with paper towels, wipe the tar off of the birds on the shore. And when people saw that, it broke their hearts. And they called their congressmen and women. And now all of those ships have to be double-hulled. They didn't before the Exxon Valdez. But we don't have that image. We don't have that heartbreaking or jaw-dropping moment where you say, holy cow, that's happening. In fact, what we have is water that looks pretty good. It's an interesting read, isn't it? And it's one that we should all take note of. The Death and Life of the Great Lakes by Milwaukee's Dan Egan. Okay, there's that. The news is right around the corner. This is WGN. About genetically altering the Asian carp so they stop reproducing. John, they tried that in Jurassic Park, says 630-847. They tried something like that with the frogs in Australia. No bueno. Yeah, I'm leery about that, too, but I'm also fascinated by it, and if there's no other option. But most of our texts this morning continue to be about self-checkout at the grocery stores. John, you can thank your state of Illinois for raising the minimum wage slowly up to $15 an hour for a job that's really not worth more than $9. Every one of the stores, you will see less employees. Equipment is a whole lot less expensive. John, do you want to have people pump your gas at the gas station again? This is from another fan of the self-checkout. But this person says, I agree, John. I was at the Jewel. It was a busy day. No baggers. And customers were bagging their own groceries. They're not giving anything away. We need to start complaining, not to the people on the registers, but to the management. All of these part-timers would have more hours, but the companies don't want to do that. 773, I was a cashier for 20 years. Oh, this is a long one. I'll have to finish this. Hi, it's John Williams, and good morning. If you're just joining us, our news click yesterday was predicated on something Paul Sullivan wrote in the Chicago Tribune, his resolution still for the Cubs in the coming year. And he said one of the things they need to agree to do is stop doing the dance in the bullpen when one of the Cubs hits a home run. You see the guy hit the home run, he starts running around, and they instantly cut to the bullpen. And the guys are all doing really fun, funny, choreographed dances. But Paul Sullivan said they should stop doing that because the team wasn't that good. And the bullpen was lousy last year. It was the fourth worst in the National League or the major leagues, some statistic like that. So we asked you, what do you think? It's been suggested the Cubs bullpen ends its home run dancing this season. You had two options. You agree they ought to stop dancing, or you disagree, let them keep dancing. 72% said you disagree. It's fun and it celebrates a dinger. Keep dancing. I was with the 28%. I thought it was really fun, but it does strike me as somebody celebrating when their team is losing. And so maybe they should sort of dial it back until at least they're looking like they're going to win the pennant or something like that. I think our news click today should be another sports one, and that is, should the Houston Astros be stripped of their 2017 World Series? Just officially hand it to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Somebody said earlier this morning you can't replay the game, and you can't go back and put an asterisk by every hit or home run that every Houston Astros player got. Some of them were in on it, some of them weren't, some of them didn't ask to be in on it, but the team was clearly cheating. So the manager and general manager have lost their jobs for a year, and some folks, especially in Los Angeles, say that the Dodgers should be declared the World Series champ.
Well, and of course, the Yankees fans feel the same way. Because they think they beat the Yankees in the playoffs.
Oh, on the way. And I guess, right. So now what do the Yankees do? Because they didn't even get a chance to lose in the World Series.
But I'm still going back to the players, and I'm sure they investigated this. But if you can prove that the players cheated, right, and it seems pretty easy to do.
How so? How is it easy to do?
Well, if a batter is up there batting and he's listening to the tin can go off, I'm assuming it didn't go off with every batter.
Who's the cheater? The guy hitting the tin can or the guy
listening to it? They're both cheaters.
Well, but to me, that's rather passive. The guy sending the signal is the one that's doing the cheating.
No. You're having a meeting saying, knock three times on the ceiling if you love me.
Oh, my darling, knock three times.
So you've got to both be in on it to benefit from it.
I guess the guy's
not banging the can, you know, on his own.
Here's what I think is happening, that it was in the dugout. It was from some of the players and some of the coaches, but it was endemic in the dugout. I don't know that you had a, you know, if they said, hey, guys, we got this one figured out. The cameras telling us what's going to happen, so we're going to start banging the garbage can. Are you going to say, hey, no, no, now, fellas, that's not exactly ethical. Let's not cheat that way using technology. That's, I think a lot of us have been in situations like that in our lives, and we have failed to stand up to the room. So I guess by omission, you're cheating. But I don't know how you're going to track down all of the players. I do think there's an asterisk by their, say, individual performances for the year and the fact that their team won the World Series. But they're not going to take away the rings. Remember now, I don't know if you heard our conversation earlier, but I want the, if we're going to start sort of refiguring things, I want the World Series Little League Championship to go back to Chicago from a few years ago, and that's not happening either. But I also noticed, you did too, I suppose, that if the manager and general manager have been fired and are also suspended for a year, then their suspension takes place while they're unemployed anyway. So I don't know how much of a penalty the suspension is. But where are you on that? It does seem heavy-handed. They do this in the Olympics. If an Olympic athlete is found to have cheated, years later, they'll go back and take away their gold medal. Literally ask for it back. And that happened, oh gosh, 3-4 years ago, right? They were able to later test some of the blood or urine or whatever it is they test, found out that there was a substance in there that wasn't supposed to be, declared the sprinters were cheating, and took away the gold medals. And then somebody who finished fourth gets a call one day. Gosh, I forgot who the athlete was. We talked to one of them. Somebody who's just sitting there doing their dishes or going about their daily lives, they get a call and they say, congratulations, you're now the bronze medalist in the Olympic Games from 6 years ago. That happens. So you could, you know, without doing anything else, just declare the Houston Astros did not, they cheated to win the World Series. You would not tolerate that at the Little League level. You wouldn't tolerate it at the Olympics. And the Olympics are kind of a corrupt organization. MLB could do that. They could just wave their wand and say the 2017 World Series has been vacated. It is now officially handed. They could have a parade. They could move the trophy over there to Los Angeles. So that'll be our news click question. And you can comment on that, 312-981-7200. You can also text to that number. Another pet topic of mine has been watching some of the mansions in Chicago and what happens to them through the years. Michael Jordan's home is still for sale. You've seen the overhead shots of it, right? The picture of the gate with his initials on the front, the big basketball court in the back. I believe he has an NBA size basketball court inside as well. He's got a putting green. That house is on the market at 56,000 square feet. It's kind of, they call it a compound. There's a story in the Tribune today by Bob Goldsboro. Mega mansions of Michael Jordan and others, languished listings in Chicagoland. So here's the story on Jordan's. Did you see this? It's in Highland Park. Has a full-size basketball court. Will have been on the market now for 8 years. Listed it at $29 million in 2012. Then the next year, he cut it to $21 million. So he went 29 to 21. And then he saw it fail to sell at an auction in 2013. It had a $13 million reserve price. He wouldn't take anything less than $13 million, though he started at 29. $13 million was his basement, his lowest level that he would take, and they didn't get that. The house is amazing. It's got 4.5, it's got 15 full baths, 4 half baths, a cigar room, indoor-outdoor pool area, putting green, a garage with space for 15 cars, and an indoor, yeah, NBA regulation-size basketball court. Then there's the Perillo's $45 million Lincoln Park listing. The picture of this is online this morning. Easily the highest price listing in Chicagoland history is the 7-bedroom, 25,000-square-foot mansion owned by United Automobile Insurance Company Chairman and CEO Richard Perillo and his wife, Michaela. which was listed for $50 million in 2016. It now sits on the market for $45 million. They would be taking a significant loss on the mansion, they said, if they sold it at $45 million, because it cost them $65 million to build the place. In fact, just to get the dirt ready underneath it, to put the house on top of it, that cost them $12 million. Just to settle the soil, and then they put their $65 million house on top of it. The mansion's current price tag is more than twice that of Chicago's next highest asking price. It's a beautiful home. If you got $45 million, I would definitely take a look at this thing. But my favorite of them all is the Villatage of Burridge, and that is still on the market. What happened to this story is the stuff they should make a movie about. John Williams, jump into the conversation if you like. 312-981-7200. You can text to that, too. A lot of you are now texting in about should the Astros be stripped of their 2017 World Series title. 773 says they should lose the title. They're a team. They win as a team. They lose as a team. How about Lance Armstrong, said 847. They took his wins away. 815 says the players should reject the idea. One of them should have been the anonymous whistleblower, just as many in the room with the president during the ill-fated call should have been a whistleblower, not someone else not in the room. Not speaking up is making a decision to go along with what you know is wrong. Signed, your friend, Alfredo. Thank you, Alfredo. Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's very difficult when everybody's doing something that you don't think is right. It is very difficult to stand up and raise your hand and say, hey, guys, it must have been fascinating to be in the dugout when they're banging the garbage can lid as a signal to the batter, and everybody knows what's happening on that bench, and nobody says anything. I'm sure a couple of them must have felt a little icky in their stomach. They must have thought, okay, we're doing this, but it's not right. And I know it's the major leagues, and maybe for that reason, you know, the end is so important that the means will justify it. But a lot of them must have felt like this is not the way to go. I'm going back to that story in the Tribune now. This is the Bob Goldsboro story about the mansions, the nine mansions in the Chicago area that are still on the market. We spoke to the realtor that had listed this a couple of times many years ago. Villatage. It was built by this dentist in Burridge. I used to go by it all the time. That's the thing. It was on County Line Road and one other road. I forget what it was. But you'd be driving along Plainfield Road, I think was it. And you'd see this extraordinary house. And for one thing, I think if you have a 45 or 30,000 square foot zillion dollar mansion, I shouldn't see it next to the light on Plainfield Road, right? It should be kind of lost in the woods or on an oceanside or at the lakefront. That you've got schlubs like me driving by on my way to Portillo's and I can see into your mansion that's worth millions and millions of dollars. It seems to me like you've done something wrong. I shouldn't be seeing you. You shouldn't be seeing me. Goldsboro writes in the Tribune, pages could be written about the saga of the 30,000-square-foot Middle Eastern-influenced mansion at 6501, yeah, South County Line Road in Burr Ridge. As the 2010s dawned, the mansion, then known as Villatage, was listed by its then-owner, a dentist named Hussein Aldari, for $25 million. He put it up for auction before pulling it from the auction block and relisting it at $13 million. While the mansion was vacant in early 20s, so here's what happens. So he's got this mansion, and before they even move in, his wife decides, you know what, $25 million, one of the largest pieces of commercial real estate, residential real estate in America, she changed her mind. She said she didn't want to live there after all, which is something I think you should have done before you picked out the wallpaper. But anyway, she says, we don't want to live there. I think she wanted to live in Florida. So they never moved into the place. So they listed at $25 million, but then they put it up for auction. They relisted at $13 million. While the mansion was vacant in early 2011, It had been sitting there for months and years. Some water pipes burst in its second floor bathrooms, flooding the mansion with enough water to supply the entire 10,500 resident population of Burridge for 3 days. You had the village of Burridge's water for 3 days going into your basement and through the walls. It started on the second floor. I guess the rest of Burridge was getting their water, but that's just one way to tell you how much water was coming through this place. The mansion eventually was foreclosed on and sold at a sheriff's sale in 2012 for $3 million. It later was listed for rent before the owner placed it back on the market for $11 million. It's amazing. The other thing that's amazing to me about some of these places is some of these houses have such checkered histories or have a history that nobody was ever able to sell it. And so somehow you acquire it, put some more money into it, and think you have the magic bullet. You can resell it, and that never happens. The guy that then bought it again cuts his asking price back down to $7 million in November of 2018. And then he listed it at $6 million in July before taking it off the market. But the listing agent says that buyer interest in the mansion has been gangbusters. We are thinking about listing it for rent for $25,000 a month. It's a spectacular home. You know the one I'm talking about if you live out there. 6501 South County Line Road in Burridge, but still looking for a permanent owner. And then the Frank Thomas, I could go through all of these, I won't, but the Frank Thomas listing is still there too. In 2003, the White Sox star and future Hall of Famer sold his custom-built 41-room, 25,000-square-foot mansion for $7.9 million. That was a slight loss he took on it, but it was a lot less than the $11 million he first sought for it. I think he got in there for $8 million, eventually sold it for $7.9 million, but he wanted $11 million. That 2003 buyer eventually lost the mansion to foreclosure. So this is somebody that buys it on the cheap. They got it for, what, $7.9 million, but they don't have the money for it, so they lose it to foreclosure. And then it sells at a sheriff's sale for $3 million. The bank gets it for $3 million back, gussies it up a little bit, puts it back on the market. They get $2.5 million for it. As part of the case, the guy that eventually bought it, he ended up pleading guilty to bank fraud and forfeits the mansion to the federal government, which sold it again for $2.3 million. That house is cursed. It's 11:25 on WGN. Hey, Joe, this is John. You're on the air. What can I do for you, Joe?
Yeah, I'd like to know how much that dentist was charging for fillings.
I've wondered that, too. If that's my dentist, I want a discount. It's like, dude, I think he had a series of dentist and cosmetic dentistry shops. So I think he was a dentist, but it sounds like he was also a businessman. But, yeah, that's a lot of money for your dentist, isn't it? Thanks for the phone call. It's like when your kid gets braces and the doctor says, thank you, now my kid can go to college, and you know who's paying for it. John, why are these people building mansions if they aren't going to stay there or keep it? I don't have an answer to that question. John, to give you some scale of how large these properties are, the White House is 54,900 square feet, and these places are 25 to 50,000 square feet themselves. I wouldn't want to live in a house that big. I'd like to live in a Mondo house. That would be fun if I had the money for it and for the upkeep of it and for the furnishing of it and had, you know, money for a real nice ping pong table. But doggone it, doesn't that sound like... I told my son once when we were looking at houses, just driving around, and he and I were eyeing some big, pretty ones and some nice, small ones. And I said, remember, the bigger the house, the bigger the problems. If you have a leak in the roof of a 2,000-square-foot house, that's a 2,000-square-foot problem. If you have a 4,000-square-foot house, that's double the headache, double the cost. Somebody texted in a little while ago, Steve. They said, how does a dentist build a $25 million mansion? I don't know. But 630 said, John, I'm struggling to pay for a five-day vacation with my wife. Some people just have way too much money. I got to tell you, that's the feeling I have, too, when I read about these people who have so much money, they build ridiculous houses they don't even want, they can't even sell, they don't even like. I don't know how we fix that, but I completely understand that impulse.
Well, I'm sure they've all learned their lessons and they've stopped the overspending.
Yes. The USA Today Today has the story about where we are in the Jeopardy! Greatest of All Time tournament. I'll catch you up on that and let you try and answer some of the questions that the greatest have been grappling with. This is John Williams at 11:33. So we'll make our news click. Which way do you think that's going to go? Should the Astros have to give up their World Series win because they cheated?
Big time. That's the way it's going to go.
Well, people will say absolutely
people are
yes.
always angry and like the text. And then mention their pensions.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame them for feeling that way. I don't either. Doggone it.
If they can show that they cheated in a World Series game, I think it absolutely should be vacated.
Yeah, I don't know. The audio that I have and some of the stories I'm reading about weren't in the World Series per se. But as was detailed at great length in a column in the Los Angeles Times today, the Dodgers were good that year. They had an amazing pitching staff. And they got hammered in the World Series.
By a guy with a garbage can.
So, but I don't know if they were using the garbage can method or some other signal. Is it absolutely certain that they cheated in the World Series or just that season?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, either way, they're out of luck now. I mean, that's what the penalties are for. It was the cheating, but if you could prove unequivocally that they cheated in the World Series, and Lord knows in Los Angeles they think they did, then should they have to vacate their World Series championship? It's just a matter of writing the letter saying, guess what, guys? You don't have it anymore, and well, please turn the trophy in by noon tomorrow. I wouldn't penalize the players. I wouldn't ask for the rings back. If that's something that the teams give to the players anyway. So I think it's just administrative is what I'm talking about.
I don't understand. If you're going after drug testing players and you're punishing them and you're punishing the team for cheating and you know who was up the bat when they were cheating, why you're not investigating the players too?
Okay, but
and
then,
I'm not saying, you know, they should be suspended for a year or whatever, but I mean, if they were participating in a cheating scheme, they were cheaters.
So is it possible in that world then that some of the players on the Dodgers, on the Astros, didn't cheat and would not be penalized?
Sure, if they didn't, if the gong wasn't banging when they were up to bat.
Well, for instance,
I'm assuming the guy doing making the noise was only doing it for batters who knew what it meant.
Okay, so the whole pitching staff then gets to keep their rings. They you know are not penalized in any way because they didn't bat.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't care about losing their rings or whatever, but I think there should be a suspension or some. I mean, maybe they've investigated it and decided they can't determine it. I don't know, but it seems like there should be some punishment there too.
Let's talk to Mike. You're on WGN. Mike, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, John. Great show as always. But listen, I think that World Series should be vacated. Look, anybody in baseball knows at any point in time, any player could be traded to any team. They all knew they were all cheaters all the way down the line. They should all suffer.
Yeah, that's weird, too. Think about that. If you were just new to that team mid-season, you'd very suddenly get an education, though, how we're doing it here. That way, you know, and again, no player stood up and said, hey, there was no anonymous whistleblower, was there, right? Interesting point. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. That'll be our news click today. You can call or text. So they're resuming the Jeopardy! Greatest of All Time tournament tonight on ABC. They had a few of the rounds, if you will, last week. Remember, that's an hour-long special. It's two episodes or shows back-to-back, each a half hour. And then each night they declare a champion. One night, Ken Jennings won. Another night, Ken Jennings beat the Holzhauer guy from Chicago by just $200. And then another night, it's 2-1. So Holzhauer won one and Jennings won twice. But one of the times Jennings won, he won by just a couple $100. So very close between those two. That Brad Rutter guy is not doing as well. He has not won any. But James Holzhauer from Naperville is hanging in there. The winner gets $1 million. The two losers each get $250,000. The internet thinks it knows who's already won. I know I could Google that and find out. But generally, they've done a pretty good job of keeping this information quiet. These shows aren't live, of course. They've been taped. They were taped in early December. Alex Trebek says his cancer treatments have left him slightly weakened, and he believes his ad-libbing skills in the tournament were noticeably lessened. I don't watch the show well enough to know. He doesn't have maybe great color, but I think Trebek looks good. He seems to be doing well on this. Lots of people watched. Tuesday's debut scored 16 million viewers within 3 days of airing, and the ratings only climbed from there. Wednesday, 16.5. Thursday, it grew to 17 million. The tournament was last week's top entertainment program and ranks as this season's most watched TV special, behind only the Golden Globe Awards. Okay, so let's try a couple of them. Can we do this again the way we did it last week, Elif? You'll play the question. We'll see if we can do the answer. Actually, they give you the answers and we guess the questions. But here we go. Here's one.
A movie quote's 1200. This quote became instantly famous.
Jenny, I'm sorry.
Don't.
Brad.
They want us to finish that quote. Oh, shoot. Play that again, Elif. What we just heard. Play that again, can you? Okay, I'll search that up. Jenny. Oh, now I do know the answer to this.
Oh, I knew this one.
Oh, did you know it right off the block? Yes. All right, so I'm looking at Elif. Where are we, Elif?
They also showed the picture.
Okay, go ahead, Elif.
Movie quote's 1200. This quote became instantly famous.
Jenny, I'm sorry.
Don't.
Brad.
Mary, what was it?
Well, that was Ellie McGraw, wasn't it? Love means never having to say you're sorry.
Yeah.
What is love means never having to say you're sorry? That's it.
Correctamundo.
Well, when they showed her face crying, you knew which it was, you know, love story.
All right, you got another one for us, Producer Elif. Here we go.
A most unusual category for final today, influential writing. Gentlemen, here's your clue. Its second line is... All the powers of old Europe have entered into a holy alliance to exorcise this specter. Pope and Tsar, Metternich and Guizot. 30 seconds. Good luck.
Okay, we don't know the answer to this one. Are you kidding me?
It was a nice read, though.
I know. That's another one of those you don't think you would even know what he just said, but that's the second line of something. And maybe by the first line we'll know what it is, but we don't know what it is. All right, Elif, can you play the answer for us?
Brad, we come to you first. You're at 7,200. What is the Communist Manifesto? You are correct, sir.
It's the Communist Manifesto. You got another one for us, Producer Elif? Let's see if we can do
better. In the 60s and in a song from Hair, it was the dawning of this.
Oh, come on!
Oh, man, I know that one.
What's the answer, Mary Vandeveld?
Age of Aquarius.
Sing a little more.
I said it in our office, remember?
Yeah.
Everyone to know that.
Every time Elif and I get one right, we pretty much just sprint up and down the hallway saying, we got one right,
we got one right. It's so exciting, isn't it?
I also got Ostentatious one time.
Yep, that was like, what was it? I forget what the category was, but
wow,
that was the answer. Ostentatious. Let's hear the answer then.
Ken, what's the age of Aquarius? Right.
Yeah. All right, let's see if we can find another easy one. I don't know. Which one is this one, Elif? What do we got next?
Blank of blank 200.
Okay, yeah. So the answer that we're looking for goes blank of blank. Go ahead.
Blank of blank for 200. On the moon. It's where the eagle landed, July 20th, 1969.
The blank of blank. On the moon, it's where the eagle landed. That landing spot is called the blank of blank.
The Frith of Forth. Fourth of Frith.
The Frick of Frack.
Come on. When I play the answer, you're going to slap your forehead and say, oh, that's right. Okay, Elif, here's the answer.
Ken, what's the Sea of Tranquility? Right.
Sea of Tranquility. You're right.
That's one of those things where I go, yeah, I knew that.
It was on the tip of my tongue.
If you had said that to me, I would have said, yes, that's right. But don't ask me to say that. We got another one of those? All right, here we go.
Rhino tracking at the Mokolodi Nature Reserve is something to try on a visit to this capital city.
Oh, that's not a blank of blank. Rhino tracking, whatever that is. I guess that's tracking rhinoceroses. Play that clue again for us, Elif. Are you able to grab that just as easily?
Rhino tracking at the Mokolodi Nature Reserve is something to try on a visit to this capital city.
Yeah, right. We don't need to waste any time on that. What's the answer to this one, Elif?
Is something to try on a visit to this capital city.
What?
it is Gaborone.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember that. So that's...
What is that the capital of?
I don't know, but that's Holzhauer, and he's got this, you know, pained look on his face.
Oh,
and,
yeah, he always does.
But that's fascinating because it seems like usually, oh, gosh, yeah, they know it. But that's him, like, squeezing his eyes and muscling out the answer, trying to... Like, you and I could do this, right? But he's, like, imagining the cities in Africa and the countries and which one goes with which. I mean, you can just see the machinations of his brain there. And lo and behold, he got it right.
Now, is that back on tonight then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And if Ken Jennings wins this evening, it's over. If Holzhauer wins, it's tied. If Rudder wins, then
it's a miracle. That poor guy. I just want him to win.
Yeah, that's right. Ganging up on the Jeopardy champion.
Brad? I want Brad to win. I want him to pull off three more.
I'd like to see him at least be competitive. It's not embarrassing, but you kind of feel for the guy. Because
he kind of gets some answers, though, once in a while.
He laid claim to being really the greatest of all time. He had won the most money ever. So then there was these other two guys. And against Ken Jennings, who has the two wins, he had beaten him four previous times on Tournament of Champions. But this is the greatest of all time special. And now he's getting his hat handed to him by Jennings and Holzhauer, for that matter. Elif, if you got a couple more of these for us? By the way, it says here, this is interesting. In the USA Today, they have an article about the greatest of all time Jeopardy tournament. And it says, John, it doesn't say that. It says, I'm having a tougher time playing along. Are the questions harder than usual? A spokesperson for the show says, yes, they are, and the players agree. I feel like the difficulty gets harder. The clues get more complex in these tournaments, said Ken Jennings. And that's got to be fun for the writers. Trebek says he's often been asked, do you make the material easier than the regular fare when you have celebrities? Well, duh, he said, of course we do. But here, listen to this. What about all of those ABC-specific categories like David Muir and American Idol? Were those paid for? You can't help but notice that there's like a running commercial in this tournament for ABC products. The network promo push was part of ABC's deal to air the program, which is produced by Sony. So is a January 2nd special in which Michael Strahan interviewed Trebek and Holm. Well, that was all a commercial. Since 1984, when Trebek was named host, Jeopardy! Has been syndicated to local stations, but it airs on ABC outlets in many top cities. Sony also sprinkles clues about its TV shows and movies into the regular edition of the game. So kind of product placement, right? Okay, let's try another one, Elif. Let's see if we can do this. You got another question for us from the tournament last week? Here we go.
20 letter words for 1600.
This shun, T-I-O-N, is the attribution of human qualities to something that is not human.
I know some of the syllables in that word. It's a 20 letter word, and it means... I see Lauren Lapka's in Traffic Central now. Go ahead and jump in there, Lauren, if you think you know the answer.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's an easy one.
Can you play the clue again, Elif, just so we know exactly what we're looking for here?
20 letter words for 1600.
This shun, T-I-O-N, is the attribution of human qualities to something that is not human.
So I know the word.
It's anthro is in there somewhere, right?
No, it's like when you treat a dog like a human.
Yeah, well, it's a 20-letter word, Steve. That's not a 20-letter word.
I know.
You say, hey, Alex, I got it. It's like when a dog...
No.
That's not going to fly. All right, here's your answer.
Ken.
What is anthropomorphization?
That's it.
Oh, I was not close there.
I was thinking so hard about what it could be that I didn't look for the answer on my screen.
You could have cheated, Elif.
No, yeah.
Okay, so you got one more for us? All right, here's another question from Jeopardy's tournament last week.
EEG for short. It's a record of some of the brain's activity.
Okay, this is a 20-letter word, EEG for short. This is another one that you go, I know that word, just don't ask me to get it right. Electroencephalogram? Eh?
What is an electroencephalograph?
No. Ken.
Sorry, guys. What is an electroencephalogram?
Ah, yep. It was Graham.
I think I skipped one by mistake.
Oh, you got one more for us? All right, try it.
2011.
Were any letter words for 2000?
This adverb means in a manner not typical of a particular person.
Okay, so watch what happens with the answer to this. Steve, I'll need you to be the jury on this one.
Okay.
Here comes the answer.
Brad, what is uncharacteristic? No. Lee? Ken?
What is uncharacteristically?
Yes, I ruled against you before you completed it, Brad. Sorry.
Ruled way too quick on our boy Brad. Ruled way too quick on Brad. He said uncharacteristic, and he said no, and then he said Lee, but that was the ruling on that. I would have given it to him myself.
We didn't see what the room, how the room reacted, though. If, like, looked at him like,
oh, you mean
indicated there were more, you know?
Yeah, like egging him on, just, yeah, and. No, Alex didn't do that, but he did, I think, tell him that his answer was wrong more quickly than he needed to. All right, so we'll see how our guy does, Mr. Holzhauer. That'll be tonight on ABC TV, and maybe review some more of the answers tomorrow. Don't forget our news click at WGNradio.com will be what should happen to the Houston Astros. Lauren Lapko, you followed sports for a long time over there before we asked you to do some of the things you do now. Where were you going to be on that? Should they take away the World Series from the Astros?
I really think they should, but at the same time, with a whole season and a whole series of games, it's kind of hard to really verify that it is the cheating that won them the game. Doesn't mean it's right, so I do think they should take it away, but there's an argument there.
Yeah, it goes both ways. But if you had to pick one, you'd say, yeah, take it away.
Yes.
Bertrand is predicting 90% of our listeners will say vacate the championship from the Houston Astros and give it to the Los Angeles Dodgers. John, they should lose the title. 815, the players should have rejected the idea. The players did not. There was not one whistleblower.
So is the choice to take it from them and give it to the Dodgers? Or I think they should take it from them. I don't think they should necessarily give it to the Dodgers.
Who are they going to give it to?
So I think there should be no World Series champion that year.
Okay. If I had to meet you in the middle, I'd do that. But I have no trouble giving it to Los Angeles either. L.A. did everything they were supposed to do.
Yeah, but if you're L.A., do you want it? Because you didn't really win it.
That's a good question. Some of you have suggested that on our text line, too. Really? Do the Dodgers want that? Yu Darvish said he would take it. He was one of the pitchers that just got hammered in the World Series. Clayton Kershaw did too, and folks were scratching their heads saying, these guys are good. What's going on?
Wait, so did the Houston guy follow Darvish to Chicago?
I know. When I saw his name in that story, I thought, that's why we gave him $1 zillion. Pick up line one. Let's talk to Jeff. You're on WGN. Hi, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Great. I'm sitting outside here at NIU waiting for my son. And I'm listening to your radio. What about the New England Patriots that cheated? That should be taken away from them as well.
You mean the Deflategate?
Yes, that, and also the reading of the lips gate.
Reading of the lips gate. What was the outcome of Deflategate? Did they conclude that they did intentionally deflate the balls that Tom Brady used to make it easier for them to pass and catch?
Well, Tom Brady, I can't remember exactly what he got, but basically Tom Brady erased his phone.
Well, he was suspended for some games.
Oh, that's the answer I need then. You're right. That's right. Brady was out for a while. But they did not take away their they didn't do that to the Patriots, no.
They should do that. And anybody that cheats at a game, you know, it sets an example for our kids. You cheat, you lose.
It would be...
unless you win and then you make a lot of money. That's a pretty good example.
Well, that's the motivation for these guys, too, right? I just think the stakes are so high. It's almost impossible for them to imagine them stepping up and doing the quote-unquote right thing. But boy, if they catch you, the consequences, I think, should be pretty dire. I appreciate you listening, Jeff. We're out of time. Check us out tomorrow. Let's see what's coming up on the Business Lunch. A couple of you have said, hey, John, did you know that they're now calling them the Houston Asterisks? That's pretty good. Let's head down the hall. Hey, G, what's coming up on your show today?
Well, we've got some new credit card debt numbers. We're going to talk and analyze this new report that came out. We're going to have a stock tip of the day. And then also, are you ready for this? It's going to be tax time soon.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking with a tax expert on filing early.